if you would, to Psalm 85. We're going to read several verses from that psalm in just a moment, but I want us to reflect on something that was said in the New Testament before we actually read those verses and take the time to talk about those verses. That statement, "Our hearts burned within us." You may recall when that was. That was the disciples on the road to Emmaus. And Jesus had been crucified, and the disciples were greatly distressed, not just the apostles. They were greatly distressed. They had been hiding out in a room until Jesus appeared to them because they didn't know what was going to happen. Even though he had made promises and had told them what to expect, they still struggled greatly until they saw the resurrected Christ. And these disciples on the road to Emmaus are having a conversation with Jesus, not knowing that it's Jesus. He's appeared to them, resurrected, has appeared to them, but hasn't revealed himself to them as to who he is. And as they're walking, he's sharing a story with them, or stories with them, and scriptures with them, about the things that had been taught about the Christ. And it's just a great visual, if you can get it in your mind, of these disciples walking. And then when Jesus revealed himself to them, and they understood who it was, and they understood the resurrected Christ, their reflection back on what they were feeling when they were walking was, "Did not our hearts burn within us?" Isn't that a great description? In other words, Jesus was telling them about the things that needed to be. And he was sharing with them about the death of the Christ, sharing with them about what was going to happen after the death, and that there would be a resurrected Christ. And they were getting excited about that. "Didn't our hearts just burn within us," they said. You get this picture that you've got these disciples, and they're getting progressively more fired up, even before they know that it's Jesus, because he's explaining to them what the truth is in the whole situation. And I got to thinking about that. The whole expression of a heart burning inside of us, and started looking at some of the Psalms, because I think there's just great messages in the Psalms from David and from others that talk about the position of the heart and what a person deeply was feeling in regards to their relationship with God. And so the lesson tonight is not titled, even though the slide says that, "Our Hearts Burned Within Us." We've got a different lesson title. I want you to turn to Psalm 85, and then we'll talk about that. Psalm 85, starting in verse 1. "Lord, you've been favorable to your land. You've brought back the captivity of Jacob. You've forgiven the iniquity of your people. You have covered all their sin. You've taken away all your wrath. You have turned from the fierceness of your anger. Restore us, O God of our salvation, and cause your anger toward us to cease. Will you be angry with us forever? Will you prolong your anger to all generations? Will you not revive us again that your people may rejoice in you?" And that's what I want us to focus on this evening. The lesson really is entitled Revival. And I want us to just think a little bit about that. And think a little bit about that as it pertains to us as a collectivity, to us as individuals. The idea of these people before God saying, "God, stir it up in us again. Revive us again." We sing that sometimes. Revive us again. Interesting, as you look at the definition of revive or revival. You sing a song that says, "Revive us again." Then you get a definition that says something like, "Revival is the giving of new breath, of a new breath of life to that which is either waning or has ceased to breathe." That's kind of an interesting description, isn't it? We're saying, God, revive us again. Why? Because we need to be revived again. I would tell you that God's church is constantly in a mode, and always has been, of going from strength to not as much strength and having to be revived again. God's people have always been that way because that's who we are. That's the way that we are. I love this description as well that goes along with the idea. You've heard of an old-fashioned revival. That's what people used to refer to, the idea of, we're not talking about a revival meeting, though that's what that referred to many times, but we're talking to an old-fashioned stirring up the flame again. Got a lesson that I do, matter of fact, getting ready to do it in a series later in the year, in a marriage series that is called Rekindling the Romance in Your Marriage. That's my title of my lesson, but that's not original with me. I came across that title somewhere, and I just thought that's a great description of that. It's a matter of get some bellows and start pumping the fire that is there, and throw some more wood on it or coals on it, and stir that up. Get the flame so it's really going again is the idea behind that. I think that's spiritually where we need to be sometimes as well, asking God, you know what? Just get it. Just stir it up. Get the fire just really burning so that we can continue. And I want us to look at three things that I think cause us to wane, cause us to lose some of that flame from time to time. And hopefully, as we understand the things that might cause us to lose it, then we can better accomplish the removal of those things from our lives. Three things that I want us to think of. If we think about this particular description, restoration of the church itself to a vital and fervent relationship with God, producing a deep sense of God's near presence and holiness, real joy, purpose, and a re-energized zeal. That's not mine either, but I love that description. I think that's a great definition of revival as it would apply to God's people. It is getting back to the point of understanding what the presence of God in our lives means to us so that we would have that renewed zeal, that re-energized zeal for God. Three things that I want us to talk about this evening. One, our eyes get distracted. And even though that looked like that maybe should have played right into the point, that wasn't intentional. Our eyes get distracted. We start looking at something that is different than what we should be looking at. That happens easily in life. That's the same syndrome that got Peter when he stepped out of the boat. We've talked about that before. Peter had this incredible faith, and that was incredible faith. Anybody that steps out of a boat with the intent of walking across the water has got an incredible measure of faith. He didn't step out of the boat doubting. But once he got into the water and he took his eyes off of Jesus and got them focused somewhere else, then he started to sink and had to be saved by Jesus. It's easy sometimes to get distracted. Think about all that this life has that distracts us. Look what the psalmist says in Psalm 119. This whole idea of where are our eyes focused? What is it that we're looking at? Here's the plea to God, which in this psalm is just plea after plea. Please teach me, God. Please give me wisdom. Help me to understand your statutes. Help me to hold close to your statutes. In verse 37 of Psalm 119, turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things and revive me in your way. That's a great passage. Because it is so easy to get distracted in this world. There was a lady, or is a lady, by the name of Dorothy Haskins that wrote a book called A Practical Guide to Prayer. And in that book, she writes about a concert violinist who had achieved great stature at that particular endeavor. She was considered to be one of the world's greatest of her time, concert violinist. She was asked on one occasion by a reporter, how is it that you have achieved such incredible success? Because she was relatively young still when she was being asked this. She gave a two-word answer. She said, planned neglect. That sounds like an odd response. Planned neglect. She said, let me explain that to you. She went on to say, I used to, because I had chores at home and such, after I was done with breakfast each morning, I would go into my room. She said, I would make my bed. I would clean up my room. I would put my clothes where they were supposed to be. I would do the things that I was supposed to do by way of chores. And then I would sit down and I would play my violin. She says, and then one day I realized I would never become at the violin what I needed to become if that was my list of priorities. She said, so I reversed my life. She said, so every morning after breakfast, the first thing I did was sat down and practice my violin until I had gotten all my practice in, and then I did my other things. Now, I'm not recommending to you, especially you younger kids, that you say, let me set my chores aside so that I can do something else. That's not the point. But the point is, she's saying, I deliberately chose to ignore some things so I could concentrate on what was important to her. That is exactly where we need to be in our relationship with God. Planned neglect. It is a matter of, like the psalmist saying, turn my eyes away. I know there's a lot that looks good. There's a lot that looks interesting. There's a lot that wants to draw me that direction. There's a lot of fun. And I mean, not just evil things. The psalmist isn't saying, turn my eyes away from evil things. He's saying things that don't hold value. They're not the important things. We need to make sure that we're praying as he did. Turn my eyes away from the worthless things. Help me to look at you. Revive me in my relationship with you. Also in Psalm 101. Psalm 101. Now he talks about the things that are wicked this time. Verse 3, I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. I hate the work of those who fall away. It shall not cling to me. It's not going to be a part of my life. He says, I just turn away. I've made a vow to myself. I'm not going to put something before my eyes that's going to lead me away from God. We need to be the kind of people that are focused. I don't know if you ever heard the fable of the swan and the crane. There was a crane that was walking around in a pond, bending down every once in a while. It was in search of snails in the pond. There was a swan sitting up on the shore, and the swan just sitting there looking very beautiful. And the crane looked over a couple of times in the fable, and looks over and sees the swan, doesn't do anything, looks over a couple more, finally looks at the swan and says, where did you come from? Swan says, I come from heaven. The crane said, heaven? What is heaven? The swan says, you've never heard of heaven? Oh, let me tell you about heaven. Heaven is a place where the streets are paved with gold, and the gates of the city and the walls are made from great jewels. And there is the very presence of God and His shining light, and the tree of life is there, and a river runs through it, and it is crystal clear. He goes through a whole broad description. The crane says, are there any snails? The swan says, no, of course not. There are no snails. And so the crane continues to walk around in the slimy mud, bending its head over, and says, if there are no snails, I don't want to go. I want snails. How easy is it to get focused on snails and miss what God has said is this incredible opportunity of blessings that He's willing to share with us? How many young people, boys and girls, who have had opportunity at home, have walked away from great opportunity at home in search of snails? How many husbands or wives have ruined their marriages or their lives because they went in search of snails? God says that's always been a problem. The crane said, looking for snails. We're going to have to decide what becomes most important. In Hebrews chapter 12, you remember it tells us of Jesus that's what enabled him to make it past the cross to the throne of God. It said because of what was set before him, the glory that was set before him. And it says, for us, look to him. keep your eyes focused on Jesus because He kept His eyes focused on God, and we make that same walk that He made. The prophet Isaiah, when he speaks for God in the 45th chapter of Isaiah, says, "Look to me. There is nowhere else, no one else that can provide to you your salvation. Look to me." We get distracted sometimes. We look away because there's a lot of appealing things that are in the world. We need to make sure that we're looking at God. Secondly, it isn't just that our eyes get distracted, our hearts get discouraged. Sometimes because our eyes get distracted, our hearts get discouraged. Sometimes when you're serving Christ, it just doesn't go exactly as you'd like it to go. Sometimes it gets tough. We understand that. In Psalm 119 again, the psalmist talks about the difficulty and the need for God, even in the discouragement. Psalm 119. Verse 107 says, "I am afflicted very much. Revive me, O Lord." I'm discouraged, God. Breathe life back into me. Have you ever been there? Just discouraged. I mean, it happens so many different ways with circumstances that are beyond our control, things that happen in our life. The road just becomes long. It becomes difficult sometimes. It's that you planned on accomplishing one thing or doing one thing in your life, and you find yourself sidetracked out of something really that you didn't choose yourself, but you're having to deal with it. The Complete Disciple, which was a book that was written by Paul Powell. He talks in the book about discipleship as a whole, but gives one great illustration where he talks about a painting that he saw. It's from the early American frontier days. And there is a wagon train that is heading west, and you can tell that from the way the painting is depicted. And it's a painting that is painted at nighttime, and the wagons have all circled around for their protection. So they form that circle, and you can see the other scenery in the background, but you can see a group of men, and you can see one man who clearly is the leader of the wagon train. You can see them, and he's got a map opened up in the midst of the men. And it's got a black line on it that starts on the east side of the map, and it's heading toward the west, but it doesn't go straight west. It goes, makes a bend up to the north, and then comes back down, starts heading west, makes a bend down to the south, comes back heading west, another bend to the south, another bend to the north. You can see them looking at the map, and it almost appears that they're having an argument over where they're going to go from where they are. And so in the picture, as he describes it, the man who's the leader of the group is holding his finger on the end of the black line, the westernmost end of the black line so far, holding his finger on the line, and he's pointing, west would be this way, but he's pointing toward some mountains and a range that is to the north of them. And he appears almost to be saying, "I understand we want to go west, but we can't go directly west. We're going to have to go up around the mountain range," appears is what he's saying. "We're going to have to go this way in order that we can get back and head west." But you almost feel that he's trying to get them to understand, rest assured, our direction is west. It is always west. Sometimes you have to get off the path that you chose, and you have to make that detour, and it gets a little bit tough, but you're still heading west. He says, don't get discouraged. God is saying, don't get beaten down, because sometimes you hit that roadblock, and you have to go around that roadblock in life. He says, if you do that, You lose your sense of direction, and you lose your fire sometimes because of the discouragement. And so we need revival, because sometimes we're discouraged. And it happens a lot of different ways. Don't know if you've ever heard or read about the Boer Wars in South Africa. Really, it was two different wars. One fought in about 1880, one fought in about 1899 to 1901 or two, somewhere in that range. But they took place in South Africa, and it was the British Empire fighting against the locals in that war. Read a great report, though. In the first of those wars, there was a battle, particular battle, where a civilian was arrested and was court-martialed. Now, I'm not even sure how you do that to a civilian. But a civilian was arrested, court-martialed, tried, court-martialed, sent to prison for a year. This was his crime. He was going up and down the battlefront, talking to different members of the army, offering discouraging words. He was telling them how badly things were going and how they weren't going to win. And he went up and down, just discouraging. You know, it's almost like as you go back and you read in Nehemiah, when you read about Sanballat and Tobiah and those others, and they're saying, look at that wall you're building. If a fox would jump on that, the whole wall would crumble. That's a worthless effort you're putting forth. The British Army arrested the man, put him in prison for a year for discouragement. But we know it happens that way. Sometimes we get our discouragement from people. Things that they say, things that they do. We need to make sure that we keep our eye focused on God so that we don't get discouraged. In Numbers 21 and verse 4, as the children of Israel were traveling, they went through exactly this syndrome. They were headed to the promised land. Think about that. I mean, they're heading to the land that flows with milk and honey, as it's described to them. They're heading to a land that God has said is absolutely rich in blessings. He has taken them out of the land of Egypt and has shown them incredibly mighty works on the way already. But here's what it says of them in 21 verse 4. Then they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. Aren't we going that way? Why are we having to walk this way? They just got discouraged. But I assure you, Moses and God and anybody else that would have been in helpful leadership positions would have said, yes, we're going that way, but we can't go that way right at the moment. We have to go this way to get that way. But they were discouraged. We need to make sure that we allow God to help direct us in our life. You remember the promise, one of my favorite passages, if not my favorite passage in all the scriptures, Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 31, when it's talking about those that wait on the Lord. Sometimes the Lord doesn't move exactly our pace that we'd like Him to, or even our direction that we'd like Him to. But those that will trust in the Lord, and that's what that wait really means there. Those who will wait, those who will trust in the Lord, do things the way God has asked us to do them. He says, those that wait on the Lord shall mount up with wings like eagles. They'll run, and they won't weary. They're not going to get tired. They'll walk. They'll not faint. Isn't that a great passage? He says, Just let God take you where God is trying to take you. He says, and you'll have strength beyond what you may think. But it's easy to get discouraged. So much so that David, you remember in the 19th Psalm, David prayed, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable. God, I want even my thoughts to be right. I want to be the kind of person that is an encourager in your work. And does everything that he can to encourage people to do your work. He says that's what we ought to be. One man I loved when his description, he said, when a happy man walks into the room, he says it's like lighting another candle. It's just a good description. It just gets a little brighter. He says that's who we ought to be as Christians. We ought to be passing on that kind of attitude. And then associated with that, because we let ourselves get discouraged, our joy gets diminished. We're just sometimes, we need to be revived because we're just not as excited as we ought to be God's children. He says, we ought to just be bubbling over because of the blessings that has been showered down on us. That's what needs to be seen in our lives. And focusing on the things of God causes us to do that. There is no question that you and I are just like Isaiah in the sense that if we can ever see God as clearly as Isaiah saw God, we will react the way that Isaiah reacted. I believe that. He was just excited. God, let me do whatever it is you need done. Let me work for you. We just have to have that excitement. In Psalm 85, where we started, you remember in verse 6, the last verse that we read, will you not revive us again? Will you not just stir that fire up? Won't you just really, really stir it up? That's the description that's used in Hebrews when the author talks about what function we serve in each other's lives. He says, don't walk away from assembling with God's people, but rather consider one another, he says, and how we might stir one another up. That's exactly what he's talking about. He's not talking about always just a little pat on the back. That's needed sometimes. But sometimes you got to take the poker and you got to stick it in the coals and you got to just jockey them all around, move everything around, throw some more on the fire so that the flame heats up again. He's saying that's what we need to do. I read this description from an older lady talking about a friend of hers trying to describe this friend's religion. She said she's in a bad state of mind. She's got just enough Christianity to make her miserable when she's doing wrong, not enough to make her happy when she's in a meeting with the saints. You ever met anybody like that? Sometimes we got just enough to make us miserable, but if that's how much religion we've got, man, we've just missed it. Because God didn't give us what He gave us to make us miserable. He gave us what He gave us so that we could have His joy in us. And His joy was full. Sometimes we just need revival because we're just not full of the excitement and the joy that God says we ought to have. But if the Spirit's in you, He says that's a result of that. Fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. That's just the fruit of the Spirit. Says if that's who's in us, then that's what we have. The joy of God. Remember, God says to us, taste and see that the Lord is good. I love that description as well, because I just got to tell you, I'm a food person. And I can get excited sometimes about food. I don't know about you. I don't know if that's a good thing to say or not, but I can. Sometimes I can get pretty excited. And you go somewhere that you've been waiting for, and you're just salivating and waiting to take a taste, and you take that first taste, and you're just thinking, oh, wow. Wow, taste that. Have you ever said that to somebody? Taste that. See how good this is. We went to a German bakery in Florida on our last trip down there, the last marriage retreat in Florida. Went to this bakery after the retreat was over because somebody had told us they had great pastries there. I don't even remember what it was called. It was a little pastry that was only about that. It looked like about the size of a hockey puck. It was about that tall. Never have I seen a pastry that small cut into that many pieces to provide that many people a taste, because everybody that tasted it said, this is unbelievable. You've got to taste this. And so they're passing out forks and everybody's trying it. He says, that's what we're going to try and show the world. I'm telling you, you've got to come taste the Lord and see that He is good. A man by the name of Vince Havner said, revival is falling in love with God all over again. Like that description as well. What happens if you don't do these things? What happens when you get discouraged? When you get distracted? when you get that disillusionment or you don't have that joy because it's diminished in your life, he says that's when the word gets disrupted. Revival stops. Work stops. May God light a fire under me. And I hope and pray that you can say the same thing as well. That ought to be a prayer of ours to our God. God, we sing that sometimes as well, don't we? Light the fire. Light the fire, God. Light a fire in me. Hope and pray as we provide and as we have more and more opportunities to serve God, that those are the kind of terms that we'll think in. How is it that we can just really light the fire and head toward God the way that He would have us head toward Him? That's what we're striving for. Hope that we can all do that together, because it's just easier to keep a fire stirred up when you've got more coals in the fire. That's what we would strive for as well. If you're not a Christian, hope you'll take care of that tonight. If you don't know how, if you don't know what that means, talk to us. Because God wants to have a close relationship with you, where you are in love with Him because He already loves you. He wants you to be equally in love with Him so that we can serve Him. For those of us that are Christians, I can tell you, there have been no question in my life, there have been times where the fire is just smoldering. I understand that. And I think that's a part of what God is saying is a part of revival. Acknowledge the need and then ask Him for the help. I pray that He'll help us and revive us, catch us on fire for His cause. If we can help you somehow respond to God tonight, let us know while we stand, while we sing.